God, please teach us the truth that it is the slave's responsibility to serve his master. Period. And if we are rebellious, indifferent about that, then we are in grave danger. Please cause us to see that you are the wise, caring, loving, compassionate master who wants to share in your riches and joy with your slaves. That's a wondrous thing. Cause us to see that complete surrender and living our lives to serve you is how we're created to be, in the way to fulfillment and joy and happiness, not selfishness, not serving ourselves as the enemy would work so hard to lie to us. I thank you for giving us the privilege and honor of being your slaves. Amen. We are in Matthew 25, the sheep and the goats. Let's read it in verse 31 of Matthew 25. But when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. And all the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them from one another as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat, and I was thirsty, and you gave me drink, and I was a stranger, and you invited me in, naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him and say, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me. Then he will say to those in his left, depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. Why? For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. And I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they themselves will answer, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not take care of you? Then he will answer and say to them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And they will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. Wow. The sheep and the goats. A couple of foundational things before we continue on in that I think we need to keep in perspective. Number one, this passage often in interpretation is often interpreted as premillennial, is after the tribulation, and when Jesus comes down blah, 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 blah. Reference to that, potentially. I think that it goes in a very dangerous direction to focus on, and I spend a fair amount of time reading different stuff, and the conservative evangelical side of it tends to be just speaking of end times and referencing end times and you know, that this is those remnants that during the tribulation and after the tribulation, and those who are offered into the millennial kingdom and those who aren't. I think that's a very dangerous thing to obscure what Jesus was saying to us. Okay? Because that's the important part, is what is Jesus saying to us? There might be some reference. I'm not going to say one way or the other. I don't know, honestly. I think that it would be very foolish to relegate that to a different time and a different place, and it's not pertinent to us. And I think that so often happens, so all of a sudden it takes the pressure off us to look at this and see how does it relate to our lives. So that's not the direction I think Jesus was going. I think Jesus has spent the last, period of time sitting here talking to them, and to his disciples, and explaining to them what being alert and watching for the kingdom. And that has relevance to every generation. That has extreme relevance to us. And that, I believe, is what he was trying to say. Does it have eschatological value to, potentially? I don't know that really matters. This isn't about another time. This is very relevant to us. The other thing I think that we want to keep in mind in the sheep and the goats is, we tend to think of black and white, and we tend to think of good and evil, and we tend to think of nice sheep and stupid goats, these bad goats and these good sheep. That would be a very wrong understanding of this too. Okay? As we talked about the bridesmaids, right? Or the virgins that were all there. They all looked the same. They all act the same. They all had a desire, and a longing to be with the bridegroom. They all spent the night waiting for the bridegroom. That wasn't the distinction. As you look at the slaves in the parable just before this, and it's important that we review that, but we're talking about the slaves of this man. They were all slaves. He gave them all his possessions. He entrusted them with all of them with his possessions. There wasn't a differential that way. And I think also we need to be very careful with the sheep and the goats to say goats are bad and sheep are good. And it's talking about good people and bad people. That is not what it's talking about. Sheep and goats are pretty close in position in the Bible. They were both used for holy sacrifice. It wasn't that sheep were unclean, or sheep were clean and goats were unclean, okay? They were both clean. And they were both used for sacrifice. And goats may be slightly only secondary in importance to sheep, okay? So, it's not like these were not, one's really good and one's really bad or something. That's a very false misunderstanding. He didn't say sheep and pigs. Okay? Pigs were unclean, or sheep and dogs. Okay? Again, we tend to think of all those who claim to be followers of Jesus, who call themselves Christians, you're going to go into eternal paradise and into the joy of our Master. And those who deny God, then those are the ones that are going into eternal damnation. And that would be, again, a misunderstanding. I think that, we need to understand that these are both good people. These are not people that are deny the existence of the reality, or even do not claim to be followers of God. They are both claimed to be followers of God, and yet there's a radical difference in what happens to them. A radical difference in what happens to them. And what is it based on? Because that's the important thing. Jesus is not taking the time here to talk about the pagans who deny God, and you, all you Israelites, or all you people who claim to have a relationship with God. The pagans who deny God, that's already a given. Okay? That is already a given. That's not a in question issue. The question becomes those who claim to follow God, and what is the differential? This is where Jesus is saying, you need to be very careful. Are you a sheep or are you a goat? Okay? And what is the difference here? So let's keep that in mind as we look. I think that it bears importance. I felt like last week in the parable of the talents, there was a lot of information. My head was going like this, and there was a lot of things that I think were important foundationally to try to reconstruct our thinking on. And I would like to do just a brief review of the talents, because I made a statement about what those talents represent. And I don't know if you guys even remember what, you know, my interpretation of what those talents represent in our lives. And it's very abstract from what we typically think of it, right? I mean, it's fairly common within church circles to talk about our gifts and our talents. Right? That's a phrase that you hear said. I need to use my gifts and my talents to serve the Lord. My gifts and my ability. My talents and my abilities to serve the Lord. Okay? I just want to say in that context that I need to use my talents and my abilities to serve the Lord. That might be a true statement, but let me just say that has nothing to do with this parable. Okay? That is a very wrong interpretation of these words. That is giving our current cultural definitions of talents and abilities, using those definitions and reading them into this parable, and completely misunderstanding what it says. Okay? And I'll say it that strongly. It's very difficult to get away from doing that, from defining words. We talked about it a lot with the word love. And it's true, and we need to look at what Jesus was saying to the people then and what they understood him to be saying and how that's relevant to us today. Not give our interpretation by our definition of words, which would be right for our current definition of talent and ability, but would be very wrong for what the disciples understood and what Jesus was saying. Okay? The word talent, we need to disassociate that with my ability, okay? With my ability to do something. The word talent is nothing but a monetary figure, okay? That is the Greek word talent that they were using. This has nothing to do with my ability to do something, alright? So, we need to disassociate ourselves from this is my talent or this is my ability. It is not at all that. It says in verse 14 of chapter 25, for it is just like a man, the kingdom of heaven. That's a big word. It is just like a man. The kingdom of heaven will be just like a man about to go on a journey. It's referencing Jesus leaving and going and being gone away for a period of time as the master and leaving his slaves on earth. And what does he do with them? Who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. Okay? This is not our ability or our talent. This is a master entrusting to his slaves his possessions. And those possessions are defined by the word talent, because that's a monetary definition. And that's what it means. Okay? It does not mean my ability, and it is not mine. This is a possession of the master that he is entrusting to his slaves. It is represented figuratively or quantitatively by the word talents. One talent, two talents, or five talents. We spoke briefly of that last week, in that, you know, when you extrapolate what a talent was at the time in monetary value, what it represented in monetary value, one talent represented 19 years of salary, basically. Okay? If you took a medium today, currently, it was about $1,000, but that was 19 years. $50 a year was about what they would make, okay? So it's 19 years, about 20 years almost, in monetary value. That's the value of the possessions that he entrusted to them. Now, what was his purpose in quantifying it like this? Because that's a lot of money, okay? That would be equal, if you're talking about a $40,000 a year that you might make, that'd be equal to $750,000. Okay? One talent. Because the ability or the tendency is to go, well, no wonder the guy was pissed off. He only got one talent that he was supposed to take care of or something, you know? What was he? C team? You know, he was third string or whatever. You know, what Jesus was saying, and I think the point that Jesus was making is, this was a very, very important possessions of his. Okay? And that, because it's talking about his possessions. This is his possessions that he is entrusting to his slaves. Okay? And we need to get that in our mind. He is talking about the master's possessions he is giving. You know, 2 talents was about 1.5 million. You know? 5 talents was $3.8 million that he entrusted to his slaves. Worth of his possessions. Okay? And the reason that I think it's important to look at that is because this was very important possessions. I realize we live in a valley where 1.5 million isn't much, okay? That's rather pathetic, actually, because in light of the world, you know, $750,000 would be enough for, you know, a lot of people to live their lives out on for the rest of their lives, okay? For tribes to live out the rest of their life. I mean, it's a very valuable possession. And Jesus' purpose, I believe, in saying this is he left a very valuable possession. So, the important thing for us to understand is because it represents he's the master and we're the slaves, okay? And what are we going to be? Are we going to be the responsible slave? Or are we going to be the lazy, irresponsible slave that he takes whatever they have away and they're condemned to hell? I mean, what are we going to be, you know, with it? So the important thing, I believe, is to identify what is the possession, okay? And I'll use the word, he used the word possessions, and I will say the word possessions. Again, the talent is just a quantitative word, okay? What are the talents that he gives? And last week I suggested, I believe this to be true, what are the possessions of God that he holds the most valuable? Nice, Norm. The electronic geek. See, yeah, yeah. That's Norm. It's all right, Norm. I love you. The possession, the thing that God holds so dear to his heart are his children, right? I believe, you know, it's not material things. It's not the trees, you know, the air, you know, the mountains, the castles that humans have built. God holds humans, his children, as his most valuable possession. He created this world in order to have fellowship with humans. Okay? That is something incredibly valuable. So what are the talents that he gives us? And the other word that we need to, again, redefine is ability. Right? Because this ability is the word, you know, is a very important word. It's dunamis. And that word really means power. And ability and might. It's used, you know, a lot of times in scripture. And almost entirely, it talks about God's dunamis. Okay? Okay? That's the same word that he used, as God's dunamis. God's, and you could say that's God's ability, but we would want to be careful and say God's power, God's supernatural power. We would want to, the predominance of the times, all but 5 times in the New Testament, that word is used to express basically spiritual power and nature. It talks about spiritual power, supernatural power, or outside of ourselves power. And for some reason, they've chosen this time, you know, twice here, and in 1 Corinthians and one other place that they chose to to express it as their own ability. But what it's speaking about, I'm confident in, just like it's used in reference to the rest of the times, is talking about the power that God has given us to do what he's called us to do. Okay? Jesus used the word dunamis purposely. Okay? And it's talking about that God put the responsibility to be stewards of his possessions according to the power that he has given you to do it. He's not asking something of you that you're not able to do. Okay? And so I think that it's important to, this is not a diminishing. I mean, if the one person who had one talent had acted like the person with two talents or the person with five talents, do we believe God's response would have been the same? Yeah. I do believe it would have been the same. Okay? It wasn't a matter of, well, he only had one and only doubled it and he only had two. You know? Rather than he had two and he doubled it and got four and he had five and he doubled and got ten. You know, well, they're way better. No. That is not God's heart, okay? God's heart is he has given to each one the ability to do what he's called you to do, okay? So, what is it that the possessions that he's put you a steward over? I believe that what he is speaking of here, and this is a very important thing to understand, the parable of the talents is referring to the opportunities God has given you to love. I believe that talents is an expression of the opportunities that God has given you to love. And you say, well, that's kind of abstract. I do not think that is abstract. What is this about anyway? Okay? This is about loving God with all our heart, with all our soul, with all our mind, and all our strength, and what else? And loving our neighbor as ourself. Okay? That is what this is about. And we can talk about doctrine, and we can talk about theology, and we can talk about what does this mean and what does that mean. We can talk about a whole lot of things, but that's what it comes down to. Okay? That's what it comes down to. That's what our lives, that's what God calls us to. Period. And if we do those two things, we will keep the law. We will fulfill the law. If I love my neighbor and myself, will I murder him? Will I steal from him? Will I covet his wife or his things? Right? If I love God with all my heart, with all my soul, will I blaspheme his name or take his name in vain? No. The law, the totality of the law is wrapped up in those two things, if those two things are fulfilled. That's what God has called us to do. So the possession I believe that God has called us to, to be entrusted with, is to love his people. Okay? And the parable of the sheep and the goats bears that out. Right? The distinction between the sheep and the goats was what? Those who loved and those who didn't love. Because in therein lies the difficulty that we have too. If we define love as like a lot and feel really good about, that has nothing to do with it. Love is serving. Love is regarding others as more important than ourselves. And that's what it means to feed those who are in need, to feed those who are naked, to be selfless. Okay? Act selfishly towards others is basically the difference between a sheep and a goat in the parable that he describes here. I think that it's really important to understand when the context of investing his property, okay? The master has given you property, okay? He has entrusted you with loving his people. He has given us the responsibility of doing that. How do we act with that, okay? Responsible slave says, my responsibility is to serve my God. And my responsibility is to live in a way, because we need to understand that if we love people, that means what? That means that we have to live selflessly. That means we have to live at risk. At risk of what? At risk of rejection. Okay? At risk of not having our needs met. That means that is my life about bringing myself security and making sure that I am secure? Or is my life about pouring out to other people? And if we pour out to other people, I mean, read Jesus' life. I mean, it never ceases to amaze me when I think of Jesus and try to identify with him, particularly at the period of time. I mean, they weren't eating, they weren't sleeping. That's legitimate. They weren't eating, they weren't sleeping, and he was human, and he was, you know, just in a way just struggling because he was pouring his life out, and on top of that, so he's pretty beat up physically that way doing it. And then they behead John the Baptist about who he says there has not been another man born. A man is a human that he looked up to. He was his cousin. He loved him. Okay? He had an intimate relationship. They beheaded him. Why? Because of Jesus. Because of Jesus. Because what he said about. He caused the man he respected on this earth, probably more than any, from what he says, he caused him to be beheaded. An innocent man doing it. Maybe troubling a bit. Okay? So here he is physically beat up, emotionally, he just gets pounded doing it, to the extent that he says, I need to go be alone, man. I need to go be alone. I'm empty. I am just distraught. I am empty. So he takes off in the boat to go hit one of the wild areas around the Sea of Galilee. And when he shows up there, there's a multitude of people that preceded him. What would be your response? Hey, I need a little me time, man. I need a little downtime. I need to recuperate here, man. I don't have it in me to pour out. I have nothing else in me to do it. I'm empty. I'm dead. What did he say? He felt compassion for the people and he poured out to them. Okay? He was selfless. Did he suffer in a sense in doing that? He did suffer. Okay? Jesus spent his life being rejected. And we will too. It is about living dangerously, or do I live securely? Okay. This is the guy who had the one talent. It's very important for us to look at what that meant. Okay. Who is the one talent man? This is a man who was more concerned with protecting his security, with protecting himself, than he was about serving his master. One thing that is very important to understand here, we are not talking about, it's an interesting thing here. When you look at Leviticus, I might read it a minute here. Let me read Leviticus, because it talks about goats, okay? Numbers. Numbers chapter 15. Leviticus says too, but Numbers chapter 15, it talks about goats as a sacrifice. And what's interesting here, this is purposeful, is the goat was used for the sacrifice for sins of omission. Okay? And this is an important thing into what he's saying, because we tend to think, the man with one talent, what did he say? I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything. Did he do anything wrong? No. He didn't do anything wrong. What was his great sin that he was condemned to hell for? Not doing what was right. He put his energy and his time into self-protection. It is no different. It is no different than how we are today, than how most people who call themselves Christians are. Well, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't cuss. I didn't smoke. I didn't drink. I didn't do those bad things. I didn't go to movies. We're in a bit of a deficit here on this, okay? Because in generations past, there was right and wrong, and they thought of right and wrong, and they had some our standards. We're way cooler than that now, okay? We don't have right and wrongs, okay? We can do anything. We can drink, we can cuss, we can smoke, we can go to movies, we can go to dances, we can go whatever. So we don't have it. What is it that we don't do that we feel self-righteous about? Okay? It is really no different though. Okay? Alright? I didn't have sex with my girlfriend, you know? I didn't have an affair outside of, you know, we are a pretty degenerate, base people in what we didn't do. You know, I don't smoke pot anymore. I don't do drugs anymore. You know, whatever. You know, I didn't rob a bank. You know, I cheated on my taxes. But I didn't rob a bank. You know, doing it. I mean, we're very. Is this about? Are we about what we didn't do? So I can stand before God and go, look. I mean, if you compare it here, look what I didn't do. I didn't do anything wrong, right? I didn't do anything wrong. And that man with one talent, he committed the sin of omission. He did not do what was right. Okay? He did not do what God commanded. What did God command you to do? Love your neighbor as yourself. What did God command you to do with his possessions, with the people that he put in your life to love? To love them. And not just love those who he puts in your immediate life, because be very clear, all of us have people in our proximity, near to us, period. And the issue is, and those are people that God put in our life to love. If they're in your proximity, God put them in your life to love. Okay? This isn't chance. And what's his multiplying your talents? Go look for more people to love. Reproduce more people, but you are being obedient to God, and it's not just, okay, I'm just going to go like this, and who do I see? I peek out from here, I see this person. Okay, I got to love them doing it. Jesus addresses that with him, right? When he says, so you say that I'm like this. You say I'm tough. And again, when you look at that in the context, it's a question mark. So you're saying that I'm like this? And okay, well, if you believe that I'm like this, then you would have at least taken the one talent I gave you, the one person, which again isn't one person, it's $750,000, it's a pretty big possession, it's something he controlled, the people around you, the people in proximity, and even though you didn't multiply that and go out and look, you would have at least poured into them. At least put it in the bank and gained interest. So you're a liar. You didn't. Instead, what you do? You self-protected. I didn't do anything wrong. I'm going to make sure I didn't do anything wrong. And then I'll be right with God. God says making sure you didn't do anything wrong is going to condemn you to hell. The issue is making sure you did something right. The issue is being obedient. You cannot live passively as a Christian and have that go well. God calls us to be actively obedient. In verse 22 of Numbers 15. Because this is interesting. Because we all want to say, I didn't, you know, how do we define righteousness? And it's tragic. It's a very good study, and we should all spend more time looking at the Old Testament and how the progressive degeneracy always happens, okay? That they have God's law, and they follow God's law, and they read God's law, and they do these things, and they get really excited. They're doing the sacrifices God called them. They're keeping the holidays God called them to do it. They're doing all these things. And generationally, the culture beats up on them, and they begin to assimilate into the culture, and they begin to act like the culture. And pretty soon, they're like, boom, really degenerate, right? And then things don't go well, right? God puts them in captivity. God sends famine. God, whatever. And they go, oh, God, where have you been? He says, well, you weren't doing... What do you mean we weren't doing that? What do you mean we weren't being obedient? What do you mean we were rebellious? I would say that we're at this point as a culture and as a church. Okay? But is that an excuse? Because what happens when you're here, just like when you're here? What is the typical human nature, self-serving way of being a, quote, Christian or a follower of God? Well, I'm going to look around me, and we're going to determine what's right and what's wrong, and I'm just going to do a little better. That way, when I stand before God, I say, well, you weren't one of the lowercase ones. You were one of the better. Okay, you must be in, right? Because you were a good one in your culture in doing it. So you did well in your culture. Is that going to be enough? Or is it going to be that you did not do what I told you to do when you had it in front of your face? He says, but when you unwittingly fail and do not observe all these commandments, okay, in verse 22, which the Lord has spoken to Moses, unwittingly, even all the Lord has commanded you through Moses from the day when the Lord gave commandments and onward throughout your generations, Okay? When you unwittingly do this, then it shall be, if it is done unintentionally, without the knowledge of the congregation, that all the congregation shall offer one bull for a burnt offering, as a soothing aroma to the Lord, and with its grain offering, and its libation, according to the ordinance, and one male goat for a sin offering. This is a holy sacrifice to God, a male goat for a sin of remission. But let's listen, and again, we tend to think of the sheep and the goats as black and white, as pagans who deny the existence and deny that God is God, and us who claim to be Christians, who say, I believe in Jesus. But listen what God says about the extremity there. Then the priest shall make atonement for all the congregation of the sons of Israel, and they shall be forgiven. For it was an error. And they have brought their offering, an offering by fire to the Lord, for their sin offering before the Lord, for their error. Now again, the error still takes. It isn't like God goes, oh, you didn't know, right? Still takes sacrifice for the forgiveness of sin, right? This is not as if, oh, you can overlook that because you didn't know. Ignorance is excusable. This is saying ignorance is not excusable. It still takes shed blood to cover your sin. Okay? They shall be forgiven. It was an error, for they have brought their offering, an offering by fire to the Lord, and their sin offering before the Lord for their error. So all the congregation of the sons of Israel will be forgiven, and with the alien who sojourns among them, for it happened to all the people through error. And if one person sins unintentionally, then he shall offer a one-year-old female goat for a sin offering. And the priest shall make atonement before the Lord for the person who goes astray when he sins unintentionally, making atonement for him that he may be forgiven. You shall have one law for him who does anything unintentionally, for him who is a native among the sons of Israel, and for the alien who sojourns among them. Okay? But listen to this. Because we tend to think that God, we're under grace and God accepts our defiance. But if the person who does anything defiantly, whether he is a native or he is an alien, that one is blaspheming the Lord. And that person shall be cut off from among his people because he has despised the word of the Lord and has broken his commandment. That person shall be completely cut off. His guilt shall be on him. And now he gives a story. Let me just read a couple of verses here, because he gives a story about how God feels about willing rebellion. Now, while the sons of Israel were in the wilderness, they found a man gathering wood on the Sabbath. Okay? He's gathering wood. I mean, he's not watching porn, right? He's not killing somebody on the Sabbath. He's gathering wood. Why? So he can stay warm, so he can cook food, right? Seems like a good thing. It's valid, right? What did God say? There should be no work on the Sabbath, right? How does God feel about this? This is God. Remember, this isn't David. This isn't legalism. Oh, we're leaving this church because you are too strict and legalistic. This is God saying this, okay? You want to be defiant towards God? We'll just listen up here, okay? Now, when the sons of Israel were in the wilderness, they found a man gathering wood on the Sabbath day, and those who found him gathering wood brought him to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation, and they put him in custody because it had not been declared what should be done to him, okay? We're trying to figure this out. Then the Lord said to Moses, the man shall surely be put to death. All the congregation shall stone him with stones outside the camp. So all the congregation brought him outside the camp and stoned him to death with stones, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. Do we know that God? Is this the God of the Bible? That's what God believes about defiance. I didn't say that. Okay? God said this. Maybe it's a different God. He's kind of aged a little bit, you know? It was like, I picked Peyton up out of the car to bring her in here, and she goes, Papa, you're getting old. So, you know, is that how we feel about God, you know? God, you're getting old. He's got rose-colored glasses. He's just the old grandpa now that kind of is absent-minded and doesn't really see any bad, and his grandkids can do no wrong, and he's like, no, the same God today, yesterday, and forever. God has not changed, same God. How does he feel about willing defiance? You see, he was just gathering wood. He was defiant. God said, do not work on the Sabbath. Okay? And he went out and gathered wood. He said, all right, whatever. God's going to be all right with it. I mean, there's God's grace, right? God said, utter defiance is there. When he's talking about sheep and the goats, he's not even talking about utter defiance. Okay? What is he talking about? I mean, that's a given. How does God feel about that? Well, we know how he feels about that. Really strongly. What he's talking about here, I believe, in sheep and the goats, I know. It's not what you didn't do. It's what you did do. That he deems as righteous. So when we come, I mean, that man thought his security would come from not doing anything wrong. His view of God was that if he did nothing wrong, he would not get in trouble with God. He was more concerned with his own security than serving his master. He believed he will stand before God and say, look what sins I didn't do. Right? I mean, I didn't do this, and I didn't do that, and I didn't act like them. And God will say, you wicked and lazy slave. You did not serve me. You did not serve me by risking your life, by living selflessly for the people I put in your life to love. Sins of omission, and listen to this because I think this is important. Sins of omission, not heinous deeds of violence, are chosen as indicative of your spiritual state. Okay? We tend to think that if we don't do really bad things, we're good. We can still serve ourselves as long as we don't harm anybody else. It's kind of an American creed, right? I can do whatever I want as long as I don't hurt anybody else. Right? I mean, that's our right as Americans. We think that's our right as a Christian. I can do anything I want as long as I don't harm somebody else. Is that what he says? You're a goat in this parable if that's your mentality. Okay? He says, sins of omission, not heinous deeds of violence, are chosen as indicative of your spiritual state. We tend to think, I haven't done any heinous deeds of violence. Did the guy who was given one talent do any heinous deeds of violence? No. Did the people who did not see the person naked and clothe him, see the person hungry and not feed him, see the stranger and not welcome him in, see the person thirsty and not give him a drink? But he didn't do anything wrong. The problem is he didn't do what was right. This is not a religion where we can be selfishly passive, selfishly self-preserving. This is not a place, we do not spend our lives trying to accumulate spiritual security by not doing bad things. That's what we've relegated it to. Okay? That somehow I will find favor with God because I quit doing some bad things. See what a servant I am? I quit doing bad things. What does God say about those who willingly do bad things? That's like a whole nother level, okay? You want to go gather wood? I know, seems simple. Gather wood on the Sabbath? You want to directly, defiantly disobey God? We don't have to even talk about that. That's a whole nother story. What we're talking about those is who appear. We're talking about sheep and goats. We're talking about those, both were slaves of their master. Both were given the possessions to be stewards of by the master. Okay? These are not, God didn't, the master didn't give his possessions to a thief. He didn't give his possessions to somebody else's slave. He gave his possessions to his slave. Do I say you're losing your salvation? No. I'm just saying the reality of who you serve will be obvious in how you live. Okay? It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what your identity is. It doesn't matter that you work really hard to have a good identity within the religious culture you live in. Do you live your life pouring out and serving others? Do you live your life selflessly? It's not about accumulating righteousness by not doing bad things. Righteousness is by being obedient to God. It is, you cannot be passive and do it. And what did he say? I mean, who is the trusted slave? I would challenge you, leave it at that. I would challenge you to consider the difference between a sheep and a goat. Again, they were both whole. They weren't an unclean animal and a clean animal. They were both good animals. They were used by the nation Israel. They were both clean. They were used for holy sacrifices for God. They're substitutionary sacrifice for God. We're not talking about pigs, which were seen as unclean, or dogs, which were seen as unclean. We're talking about sheep and goats. Their blood both. God used them substitutionarily in obedience to him for the forgiveness of sins. It wasn't the bloods of bulls and goats that covered their sin, but it was obedience to God. Again, it was active participation. Was it necessary in Old Testament to actively participate in obedience to God in order to be right with him? Yes. Yes. You had to travel to Jerusalem. You had to bring animals. You had to kill animals. You had to make sacrifices. You had to actively participate. You couldn't just, well, I'm going to be good and stay home. I'm just not doing anything bad. Okay? Wouldn't have got it done. It was necessary for the shed blood forgiveness. What was that? That was obedience to God. That was the perception that I am a slave of my master. And how am I a steward? How am I serving? Do I serve my master? Or when my master is absent, do I do what I want to do? And just make sure I cover my fanny by burying what God has given me in the ground. That's what he did. They just did what God... I'm just going to make sure that I don't do bad things. I'll bury it in the ground. That isn't wrong. I'm going to make sure it's secure. It's not like he was flippant with it and went out and spent it. No, I'm just going to cover myself and bury it in the ground. Make sure that I'm taken care of here. God said no. If you really believed, you would have at minimally have loved the people right in front of you, much less obediently gone out and loved. Rather than going, oh, who's my neighbor? Who's my neighbor? Oh, that person, right? Okay, God, I'll try to love that person. You would have minimally done that. Let's see my family. Let's see the people that I work with. Let's see the people right next to me. What was the good and faithful servant when they multiplied and doubled what God had given them? They went out and were obedient to their master. By the ability, by the dunamis that God had given them, they went out. And they risked, because it's risky. Again, don't misunderstand that. This wasn't a self-investment. This wasn't for them to go prosper themselves. God didn't say, here, hold on to this 3.8 million or whatever money you make off it. That's yours. Just give me my 3.8 million back when you come. No, it wasn't their money, and the profit off it was not theirs. This was about serving their master. And what is a good servant? A good servant is to be responsible. To be responsible with God's possessions. And God's possessions are his people. God's possessions are his people. I believe when he says, Jesus, I think when Jesus says to love your brethren, and I think that he means that, okay? I think when he says, when you did it, and the king will answer and say, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me. You know, I think that that's talking about loving your neighbor as yourself. We're called to do that. But he says, by this will all men know in this world that you're my disciples, that you have love for one another. And when he's talking about that, he's talking about this right here, man. He's talking about this right here. How do we live our lives poured out? Are we to pour out outside of here? Absolutely. But we're to pour out in here. We're to pour out to each other. We're to live our lives not to not do bad things. We are to live our lives to do good things, to be obedient to God and loving our neighbors ourselves. And the difference is huge. We tend to think of ourselves as pretty good because I quit doing bad things. Okay? He says, that won't get it. Are you actively loving? Are you actively being stewards of the possessions that I've given you? That's a challenge to us. Again, we've talked in the past, and I've mentioned this before, but I believe it's very true. Are we outpourers? Because I believe that's what being created in the image of God constitutes. I believe that God is an outpourer, right? It's not like you're preserving yourself and you're making sure you've got your clothes washed and making sure you're not doing wrong things. It's about outpouring. God is an outpourer. Being created in His image is being an outpourer. And our lives is replicating Him, is being like Him, is being obedient to Him, is imitating Him, will be that we're outpourers. Not self-serving, but outpouring. Is that what your life looks like? To me, that is the mark of a Christian. That is the mark of a Christian. It's not that you're a good person, you don't do bad things, you're self-preserving, making sure that you're... But what is your sins of omission? Yeah. Not pouring out your life puts you in a bad place. Makes you a goat instead of a sheep. Let's pray. Man. God, please, please cause us to understand that we are to live at risk. We are to live dangerously. We are to love dangerously. Dangerously meaning rejection, scorn, hate. You said, if we are truly your disciples, the world will hate us. Obviously, love must mean something much more than just being nice people, because everybody likes nice people. We need to regard others as more important than ourselves. We need to live our lives selflessly and trust you to meet our needs, not trying to secure our lives and secure our needs. Our lives are to be about giving ourselves away. And not to isolate ourselves, try to perfect our righteousness on our own. God, I ask that you would cause us to realize that you are much more. You want us to live at risk. You want us to take this possession rather than burying it in the ground and making sure we don't get in trouble for doing something wrong. You want us to risk going out and investing it with the potential of risk. To pour our lives out will be risky, will be dangerous, will hurt, will guarantee, we know, pain. But you say, blessed are those who mourn, for they will comfort. They will be comforted. Living a life, pouring out, being responsible with the talents, with your possessions that you've given us, will mean that we mourn. That we're willing to hurt for those who are hurting. That we never say, oh well. That we have pain in our hearts and our souls because of divorce. Because of abortion. Because of people serving, watching them serve other gods because of bondage to sin, to watch the enemy in other people's lives. We will not say, as the Pharisees did, I'm glad I'm not like that guy. At least I'm not like that. that we will weep and mourn and cry. And that's what you tell us to do. Cause us, God, to realize that being passive in our relationship with you will have disastrous eternal results. Cause us to realize, God, that you have given us the dunamis to do what you put in front of us. You do not ask us to do more than we are capable of with the power you give us to love. With the strength you give us to love. God, please teach us what it means to be outpourers rather than intakers. It's difficult in this country to see that. We're such a consumptive, consumer-oriented society. And we think that limited consumption is a righteous life. But we're to be giving away our life. Cause us to understand what that means. Jesus, I thank you for the privilege and honor. We are the slaves. We are slaves, whether it's the slaves of a wretched master, of Satan and the enemies of God, or whether it is a slave with privilege and honor of having you for our master. Cause us to realize that is not about taking it in and making myself happy. That is about serving you. Being responsible with the possessions that you put in our path. Your prized possessions. Your very valuable possessions. Even the least of these, you say, when we give them a drink. When we regard them as more important than ourselves. It's as doing it to you. Amen.